roll, baby, on MMA Junkie Radio with Gorgeous George and Go. This is what we do and why we do it, baby. We rollin'!
Covering MMA from all over the world, this is the premier stop for all your combat sports needs. MMA Junkie Radio from the Mandalay Bay Resort and Casino in the fight capital of the world, Las Vegas, Nevada. The lights are on and the mics are hot. It's time to get your MMA fix, junkies. Take it away, Big John.
Gorgeous George and Goz, are you ready? Junkie Nation, are you ready? Let's get it on.
What's going on, Junkie Nation? Gorgeous George and Goz reporting for duty here on a Thursday. Excited to talk some mixed martial arts and boxing. Today, we have two fine guests from, representing both sports. So, it's going to be heavily based on interviews, and I'm excited about it. There is no UFC card this weekend, so it's a little bit of a break there in terms of previewing Saturday. But today's show will consist of Big Ben Rothwell, longtime UFC heavyweight. He's fought in all the big organizations, was a world champion back in the IFL days. He'll join us to talk about his big win this past weekend. It was a UFC fight night, and he defeated Chris Barnett. And our second guest will be, I keep making sure I'm not butchering this, goes. We're talking to Mike Rosenthal, the managing editor of Boxing Junkie, about Richard Schaefer, who is now an advisor to John Jones. So it'll be a fun show. We're going to have two interviews. And, of course, when we can, we will touch on some of the latest news that is out there. So, fun times here as we lead into Memorial Day. I hope you all have a great weekend, but we'll kick it off here with you guys for the next hour. Buckle up. It's MMA Junkie Radio on a Thursday, May 27th. All right, guys. So, today's a little different. We're going to have a couple guests. We got a lot of questions for both guests. One of them is part of the Junkie family, and that's Mike Rosenthal. He'll be on at 9:40 a.m. Pacific time. And then the other one's like family because we've known him for so long, but we've actually...
here comes something incredible.
Is that me?
Unbeatable.
Yeah. About that. Yeah.
Plus, unbeatable gas.
Sorry about that. Give me a second. Okay. The other guy is like family to us because he's hung with us at Junkie Gatherings. We've done a military trip with him, covered him for a long time, even going back to the IFL days, Affliction, and the journey took him all the way to the UFC. The guy's been fighting for a long time, and it's Big Ben Rothwell, of course. Can't wait to talk to him. 9:10 a.m. Pacific time, but I see he's in the queue, goes. Has he still got the donut on the bat, or is he still hacking away on the bat on the on-deck circle? Is he ready to come on?
Yeah, a little bit of technical difficulties here. We got Ben Rothwell. He's gonna fix his camera situation. Gorgeous George is a complete mess over here. I don't know what the hell's going on today. But yeah, it's going to be a fun show. One thing that we do want to talk about, I mean, obviously there's not much going on in mixed martial arts this weekend, but there's so much to unpack from the previous weekends, you know, with doing the show 2 days a week now, and just between the fight cards and what happens in, I don't want to say the drama world, but the storylines outside of mixed martial arts, there's just a lot to unpack. And when you throw in interviews, sometimes we don't have a lot of time to cover it. And that's where we use this avenue of the spinning backlick. It's a show that we do here on MMA Junkie that you guys get. Kind of close to something like Pardon the Interruption around there, something like that. But we do talk about those types of things there when we don't get it, have enough time to do it on MMA Junkie Radio. And one thing I did want to talk about was just kind of that John Jones situation here with Dana White. You know, he's got new representation. He left on good terms with Malki Kawa in first round management. But my question is, what is it exactly that he's trying to do here with new management? Because is he hoping that this guy gets him what he wants, or is he hoping that this guy can kind of mitigate the damage that has already been done? Because I just think John Jones made a huge mistake. He really did. He showed a lot of his cards, and the UFC basically said, look, we don't need you. You know, we can just keep going without you. So that's something that they're going to have to figure out. I don't think he can get what he wants. I think he needs to go through a couple steps. One is probably tucking his tail, you know, in between his legs. He's probably going to have to take a fight, and he's going to have to be what he's really good at, and that's being destructive and coming in and winning a fight, a big fight. And then I think he holds more cards.
Sorry about that, folks. I may need to get a new laptop, goes what I just discovered.
Yeah, it's really sounding pretty bad. So
I popped through the Carla Esparza interview the other day. Remember I was telling you, I go, is your computer tripping? Was she tripping? But it came out great. I saw it on Junkie, but I think it's something on my end then.
Mm-hmm. You know what I'm going to do actually right now, George? Big Ben Rothwell's ready to go. But what I'm going to do, I'm going to set up that other laptop for you. All right?
Well, so far, so good. So let's just go for now. Mm-hmm. I mean, is it horrific or can we power through this?
Nah, just go through it.
I guess I'm talking to Ben Rothwell. Am I talking to Ben Rothwell or not? All right, folks, sorry about this. I need to get a new laptop. I just upgraded from iPhone 7 to iPhone 12 about a month ago, and it's been a delight. It was nice to have a paid-off phone for a few years, just not have to bother with it. Man, you got to have it, especially in our business. And when it comes to laptop, I think this one's ran its course. Do I talk?
No.
Oh, don't talk. All right, Ben, you're on deck. Hang tight. I'll be in a sec. I got a lot of windows open, though. That's the problem. So anyway, folks, what I was saying was one guy's part of the family in terms of Junkie, boxing Junkie. The other guy's family in terms of we've just known Ben for such a long time, and we've been lucky enough to spend some time with him and his family, kind of like away from the traditional covering athletes. And I know you're not really supposed to cover the athletes. It's actually a big no-no in journalism, but those and I have often said we're kind of not journalists. Started off as fanboys.
So, we've actually done the military trip. The morale visit was no big deal. In fact, they had the support of MMA Junkie on that one. But, you know, hanging out and drinking. And it's funny because I was at my buddy Big Ralph's house when the fights were taking place this past Saturday. And he was pulling out his phone. And he was showing a face-off with him and Ben Rothwell inside of a hotel because Ben had come to hang out during our 2000th show. And Ralph is totally looking up at Ben because Ralph's all of 5'8". Ben's about 6'6" or something like that, 6'4". So it was pretty funny, but he was so proud to whip out the phone and say, man, I met this professional athlete. He was so cool, even had a shot with him. So that's why we've always referred to him as family. And I think he's ready to go, and I'm ready to go. Right, Goz?
Yes.
All right, should be smooth from here on out. What's up, Ben? How are you?
We're good.
Yeah.
This is quite the technical mishaps going on here.
Yeah.
Sorry about that. Congrats on your win this past Saturday. You went through a lot, not just to get to last Saturday, you know, with the fight having to be redone and stuff, but obviously this past year's been tough on all of us. Pandemic, Kenosha. So congrats on that win. It must be a huge relief to now be able to hang back and be with your boy and your wife and friends and family.
It's been hard, but not as hard as you've been on that computer. That poor thing. I could hear it sizzling. George.
It's running its course. It's coming to an end.
You're like, we'll wait till Ben Rothwell comes on to have everything be like broken and dysfunctional. Thank you guys. I appreciate it. It's awesome.
Yeah. Hey, how about the guy who showed up with a black screen to start off the interview?
George's computer was like so bad it's messing up my computer. It's just like an ongoing virus.
You're in a different spot right now because I really dug this. All right. Last time we spoke to you, you looked like you were in some kind of man cave or office, and you were just starting to put up these pictures. I think there was a real cool one of Darth Vader or someone like that. Where is that?
There, and my wife is insistent that, it's a dungeon, blah, blah, blah. You got to come in the sunlight.
No, it's a cool dungeon.
I know. But she's like adamant about me being in sunlight. I've been losing a lot of the battles lately around here. So I just let it go. I'm winning the ones that are important in the cage. And then when I cut out of the cage, I lose all the battles. So it's the way it is right now.
George kind of touched on something, but I mean, really, when you think about it, right, Ben, everything surrounding this fight, have you ever been a part of a fight that's had so much chaos going on outside the world, around the world, within the fight, within, you know, just trying to get here and have your fight go off? Can you remember any other instance that was almost as bad as it?
Not really. I was going to say, you know, the pandemic started last year. I had two fights during that, and, you know, they're pretty crazy. The fight with OSP was the first fight back, and everybody was coming at Dana White about trying to throw shows, and it was crazy in its own right. But OSP agreed to the fight 2 weeks before, and there was no basically any catches after that. This fight, you know, 7 month training camp and multiple opponent changes. It's supposed to be Philip Lim most of the time, and then you know, here I'm going to fly to Vegas 2 weeks ago. I'm going to have my very first fight in Las Vegas. 22 years in this sport, I'm going to have my very first fight in Las Vegas. So it's kind of like a special thing for me. And I'm like, wow, it's really going to happen. First fight in Vegas. And I was talking to my management about it. And I'm like, yeah, I was supposed to fight in Affliction. Didn't happen. I was supposed to fight, you know, Pedro Hizo in Vegas. Didn't happen. I was supposed to fight in the IFL one time in Vegas. Didn't happen. All my UFC time, you know, a decade in it, never happened, fight in Vegas. So I'm like, this is really going to happen. I get there. I weigh in. I get off the scale. I'm talking to my, you know, corner man, and I get a phone call telling me, yeah, Philip Lim's out. You're not going to fight in Vegas. And just, I was like, doomed to never fight in Las Vegas. And then we get home, and they're like, all right, he's going to fight you, though. He just needed a couple weeks, and they're going to rebook it in Las Vegas, so it's going to happen. And I was just like, this fight's not going to happen. Like, they're booking me in Las Vegas again. I'm like, I'm doomed. It's not going to happen. So 5-6, you know, and then, of course, then I get the call 2 days later that he can't fight me, and I'm like, not even surprised because you booked me in Las Vegas. I'm not going to fight Philip Lim. And they kept going, you know, 4 or 5 different guys back and forth, and I was just like, uh-huh. Sure. And I was deep inside. I'm like, I got to fight. You know, I've been training so hard. I'm like, God, if you're there listening, like, let's make this fight happen. And then Chris Barnett, you know, went through. And then we got the fight. We did it. And finally.
Well, on that same note, one of the things that people love about fighting in Vegas is the history that the city has, right? So they don't do this too often anymore, but, you know, when you go through the Mandalay Bay, you go through the MGM, you see those old fight posters, and you see guys like Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, Oscar De La Hoya, Felix Trinidad up on those walls. You got to fight in Vegas, but do you feel like you still need that one where maybe you're at the T-Mobile or something like that with the crowd, or enough with Vegas?
No. I want to get back there. I want to fight in the T-Mobile or the brand new, I'm not going to say its name because I mess it up, big football stadium. Let's get a huge super UFC built in that thing. Let's sell that thing out. Stop making, let boxing take all the credit still. And, but yeah, I get a fight in Vegas with a crowd, you know, because that crowd, I know, you know, the Las Vegas crowd will be one of the most educated, loudest crowds for MMA. And I can't wait to fight for them.
Yeah, I was going to say that, and I was actually going to bust your chops, and now I can't because you kind of agree with the take. You fought in the Apex with no fans. We can tick the box, but, yeah, we need to have a proper fight. You have a lot of fans, man. People get excited when you fight. You know, I could see it on Twitter. A lot of my friends and a lot of junkies were texting. So hopefully sometime soon it's Allegiant Stadium where the Raiders play. And, yeah, man, boxing's got one on us because I think Fury and Wilder are going to box there. And I was pretty sure the UFC would beat them to it, but it doesn't look like that's going to happen. But it doesn't mean that the UFC can't still have a show and maybe top them. So we'll see about that. But I'm glad you have the aspirations to to do it proper in the fight capital of the world. Did you come out of the fight, Big Ben, injury free? Are you good to go, like the rest, family time, and then start a camp in a few months?
Not a few months. I want to. So based on my team, I talked to my team. Kayla and I are going to get back starting Tuesday to start sparring. Luis and I are getting together Thursday. I got to get going. I was trying to push myself and get going this week. I said in the after fight press conference that I was going to try to get going, but it's not easy. At 39, body just is like telling me to fuck myself. It's like, dude, I just gave you my best for 7 months. So we're going to sit fine line. I got to rest a little bit, but if I rest too much, I've already, I get out of shape quick. So I'm walking a fine line of like, I got to give myself some rest, but then I got to get back on it and get to it. No time to waste.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know yourself best. You've won 3 of your past 4. So right now would be a good time to, I guess, keep with that momentum and get yourself in the position to be in that stadium show. The stadium show is going to happen sometime this year. I feel it. So, like I say, you know your body best. I guess there's got to be ways where you can still train, still break a sweat, and not, you know, add pounds or whatever, but without the heavy lifting, you know what I mean? The stuff that really, really tears someone down in a camp. Do you have those types of workouts, or is every workout goddamn hard?
Oh, no, it's a mix. I mean, I can even spar in a way where I've done it for so long, I can get a really good sweat, spar really good, and both of us walk away like not a big deal. It's just the kind of intensity you push into it. And then there's other times where I'll do half the amount of rounds and I'm done. You know, it's just all about the volume and how many takedowns and all that. So there's always a line with that too. You know, I can train and not break myself down. That's the kind of training I need to do right now. The next few weeks is the building type of training, staying on the treadmill and running. The running has really been a big deal because I didn't do very much, say 5-6 years ago. Like all through the IFL, I wasn't really running during all that period of time. Beginning of the UFC era for me, I really wasn't running. Now it's like I run 3 to 4 times a week. It's a really big deal. I think it's you know, being a big guy, it's important. But at the same time, it's also can be really hard on me because I am big. So, you know, it's just trying to find that happy balance. And, you know, it's just something I have to continuously constantly work at.
You hit this guy with some big shots. He wouldn't go away. But he also hit you with some big shots. You wouldn't go away. At the end of the day, was this your type of fight? Or, I mean, I know it's always get him out of there as quick as possible, but you kind of look like you're having some fun.
This was one of the funner fights I had for sure. Because after the takedown and we got back up and I went into the second round, I knew I was in complete control of the fight. I'm actually kind of disappointed about a few things because I became in such much control in the second round where I maybe could have picked how I finished. But at the same time, I wasn't going to disrespect the sport. I'm like, nope, just handle this the way it needs to be handled and finish as soon as I can. With the positives, you know, I hit my takedown and I was working some ground. And then the same side, I let him get back up because I didn't put my hooks in. It's like such a no-no. It's like I'm so much better than that. And I think I was just excited. 10 years, I hit my first takedown. I just really haven't utilized my wrestling for a long time. And now it's going to be the game changer. It changes my game. It makes me such a bigger threat to the other heavyweights. And we're going to see some big changes this year. So I'm looking to get down on the ground with these guys, and it's going to make some changes. As far as him hitting me, come on, man. I've been hit by some bad dudes in this place. So if that's the hardest I get hit, I'll be okay. You know what I mean? Not taking anything away from him. He's got a low center of gravity, and that dude is strong. So it's not somebody you really want to get hit on the chin with. But luckily, I was getting hit on my blockhead, so it wasn't so bad. So I'm okay.
Mm-hmm. Can you expand on, you said you didn't want to disrespect the sport. What was going on there that you felt like you may have done that?
You get cocky, and you're like, oh, I got this. And then the dude hits you with an overhand right. It's like, yeah. I've been around for a minute that those are the kind of mistakes I don't need to make, you know. And,
yeah.
It can happen to anybody.
It was clear you could take his best shot, and I think that's what allowed you to keep bobbing and weaving in and picking your shots. But at the same time, what makes him kind of dangerous is even though he was obviously more exhausted than you were, he did throw some unorthodox kind of winging type hooks that can be kind of dangerous, and you did a good job of not walking into one of those. But all in all, it did look like you were in control from start to finish.
Absolutely. He can be dangerous. Like you said, he's like I said, the guy's a power lifter. His arms and legs are pretty strong. He carries a lot of that weight around. And he moves well. He's very athletic. And he does throw with reckless abandon that if you are sloppy and he hits you right on the chin, that he can knock some heavy weights out for sure. And because he's so unorthodox throwing that stuff, yeah, it's just people are used to dealing with a 1-2-3. And then this guy's throwing stuff from angles that you just aren't used to. So, I mean, it even kind of caught me off a little bit. You know, I was even ready. I was like, guy, he does spinning kicks. He throws at weird angles. And even knowing that and being a lot more patient, I noticed the commentating team kept, you know, recognizing that I was being patient. I mean, I want to go in there and be crazy. It's great. But it's at the same time, I can't against a guy like that because – he's doing something crazy. I don't want to move in and get hit by something stupid. And he basically was throwing himself on the spear, as I say. I was kind of being patient, and every time he throws something crazy, I was countering him, you know, and I kind of just let him end himself.
Ben, is it almost unfair for the UFC, for us, even for you, to really assess your last couple performances just because of what you've had to go through to get to those fights, the situation surrounding. And I was thinking about this and I was watching you and I was like, I don't even know if this is a true representation of Ben Rothwell because he's just had it kind of tough going into these last couple fights, even in a win.
Hey, you know, at the last fight in Abu Dhabi, that sucked. It was one of the worst fights I've had to go through. You know, Tybura keep counting to his lucky stars because that was the time to beat me. That was going to be it. It's just a lot was against me with that. So all the stuff going on at home with my whole city burning down, the flight didn't go well. I didn't sleep at all. Not making excuses because I got in the cage and I threw some heat. It's just, it is what it is. You know, it's either you're going to do really well and you feel good and the guy beats you, or you don't feel good and the guy beats you. It's like, well, when you don't feel good, it's like you're always going to have that inside of you. Like, all right, man, you didn't beat me at my best, so we're going to do this again someday. And that's kind of where I am on that because I was coming on. I was on a 2-fight win streak too. And honestly, I was on a hiatus 2017, 2018. I didn't get a single fight in. I come back in 2019, and this was fight number 6. I'm kind of back to zero. I'm 3-3 now in these last 6 fights. But the first 5 fights, you're right, I haven't been myself. There's a lot of rebuilding that's been going on. That 2 years off was hard, very, very hard on me. I've been dealing with a lot physically and a lot of things inside with internal medicine, dealing with my hormones. There's a lot to deal with. But I'm now in a place where I really feel like I feel like, in my opinion, I look better than I did 10 years ago. I look better now at 39 than I did at 29. That's crazy. It just shows, like, that's how hard I'm busting my ass. And I'm doing a lot of other things outside of dealing with my recovery and with my diet. I spend a lot more money on my coaching because now my coaching consists of Andy Geipen, who is a top-notch nutritionalist. And he's really doing a lot to help me with science and dealing with my diet. And I'm just trying to pull out all the stops and do my very best. And the last 5 fights, they're garbage. And let's be honest, I'm really flat-footed. I'm just not doing well. There's certain things that have happened in the fights prior to like the Andre Arlovski fight in July 2019. That was a mess the week of the fight. I'll just put it this way. Some people lost their jobs because of things that were going on. So it was obviously some things were going that shouldn't have happened. This last fight, the fight in Abu Dhabi, like I was just saying, there's just a lot of things were, and I went crazy. Apparently, that fight was the second most strikes thrown in a 3-round heavyweight fight in history. So I went in there and went ape shit because I was kind of like, I was so scared because I knew that I was like, I had no sleep. I was broke off and I just went in like a wild animal and that didn't work. So this fight, you seen the opposite. Like, here's a guy that now got to sleep. I trained properly, 7 months. I got my body right. I'm finally feel like I'm kind of like normal now. I got my body like healthy, and I was able to fight patiently. And like the fight wasn't long. It was 2 minutes in the second round, but I mean, I was fine. I mean, I was ready to fight two more rounds hard. I'm really trying to get myself ready to go full five round fight and still be able to talk after the five rounds. I mean, that's the kind of conditioning we need, and I'm trying to get that. So yeah, I don't know what it is, but I feel like it didn't matter who the opponent was this fight. I feel like something happened. Something's different. Something's different about me. Do the fans notice? Because man, I got a lot of love on this fight. Fans really hit a lot of messages, a lot of positive comments. The commentators are cool. The UFC's cool. Everybody's like really happy with me right now. And maybe it's the way I look. Maybe people can see the difference. I don't know. Maybe it's God. All of these things maybe together. Something happened. Something's different. And I'm really excited for the next fight and to get going on a win streak.
What are you most proud of this run here that you've had with the UFC? Because you've had a lot of fights. You've had a lot of fights in your career, but what's the one thing that you're most proud of?
Probably the fact – okay, there's a couple things. I'm just, off the top of my head, my son was born March 25th, and I've won a fight now 8 weeks after he was born. Sounds crazy, but that's something that was really weighing on me. Because I've watched for years fighters and they have a baby and then they lose their next fight. I don't know what the statistic is because maybe it's my own thing that I've witnessed, but I bet you the statistic is there's a lot of guys that have lost fights after having a baby. And that, my wife has listened to me, so she's probably stressed out during this whole time about it. And she's a badass, and man, did she do an outstanding job taking care of him. And I honestly don't care who I went against. I think you guys could see I'm in a different place. You can see my shape, your conditioning, see where I'm at. It doesn't matter who I was in a fight. I'm going to win. I mean, that's just how I felt. And we did it. You know, he's here. He's healthy. And we got the win. And I feel like we really learned a lot. And we're ready to continue on the rest of this year. Because, you know, let's face it, the first 2, 3, 4 months of a baby, probably the hardest. You know, they're waking up. They're going through a lot. And now each month that goes by, it's getting a little bit easier. So I feel like I'm going to go into the next fight just even stronger, even better. And I'm proud of the fact that we got it done. We got it done together. You know, we're a team in this. I said it once, I'll say it again. I love winning because it's not just me that got the win. She won. He won. My team won. All of my family at Rothwell and May won. Like, because everybody put so much into me. And that's why I just love this so much, because I get to see other people smile and they feel what I feel. Second thing that I'm most proud of is the fact they got my third go-go choke. They can call it whatever they want. We all know the truth. And I submitted one of the best submission artists in the planet with it. And I got a third, you know, a third submission. And it's it kind of reawoke something in me that I know I have a huge advantage over the rest of the heavyweight division. A huge advantage. Like, distinctively, I can beat everybody in the top 10, including the champ. I get a hold of your neck, man. It's over. But I can't wait to show you guys all the other submissions that I got. I got things like the go-go, but I'll do it to your arms and to your legs. It's coming.
Can you call it the go-go choke?
What's that?
The other ones that people haven't seen, will you call one the go-go?
Arm bars, triangles. You know, I got key locks and heel hooks that'll finish guys. You know, it's just stuff, a lot of stuff that you probably haven't seen even heavyweight people do off their back. And it's coming. And that's me off my back. Dude, put me on top. 280 pounds come crushing down on you. Your world's going to feel rough. It's going to get ended.
The MMA judges love that top game. So, yeah, them chokes and holds. As long as you're on top, that's a good thing. Because a lot of times when you're on your back, sometimes the decisions won't go your way. But it doesn't matter because you finish most of your fights by some sort of a KO or submission anyway. That's 35 out of 39, Big Ben, of your wins have been finishes. You got to be proud of that stat too.
It's good. It's okay. Good. Because it would be better 100%. If it was 39. I want 39 out of 39. Then I'd be like, that's acceptable. 35 out of 39, it's okay.
You're fighting some of the best in the world. Have you seen the guys you've fought in your career? I mean, like,
it's okay.
Be happy with 90%. You don't see 90% too often. But I love that you strive to continue to improve. So
only one in the UFC, mind you, too. Wait, OSP was one. Garbage. And then and, oh, two, two. I've had two, two, Scroob, two
Barnett, my, Overeem, Vitrion.
Yeah, two in the UFC.
What are you talking about, Vera? You finished. How was that fight?
Yeah. So I've only had two decisions. It was Gilbert Ivel and OSP. Yeah, yeah. Only two of the were in the UFC. Sorry.
Okay, I thought you meant finished.
No, I finished the rest. No, I finished the rest.
Hey, here's another thing too. About 5 years ago, you sat with us once, and then you kind of joked that your corner. So you're giving them praise right now, and I'm digging it because I think one time you said, "Sometimes my cornermen know that it doesn't matter that they're there. I just kind of coach myself. I know what to do." Has that changed, or do you still have a little bit of that side to you?
You said, "Do I tell my cornermen to fuck off?" Still, yes, I still do because. Was this a children TV? Sorry.
That doesn't matter, but I didn't say that you said that, but go ahead.
Well, you did. I'm going to tell my cornerman I got your picture too. I'm like, this guy right here. So it's they're with me the week of the fight. Like, they're with me. I listen, you know, we do our stuff. It's in the fight. Once I'm inside the cage, listen, if I don't know what to do, we got problems. And some guys are like that. Some guys need that reassurance from the coach in the corner, yelling them in between rounds. Tell me what to do, coach. They're younger than me, fight-wise. You know, I've just been doing this where it's like, we got it. You know what I mean? So what my guys focus on is what is my opponent doing? What is the cornerman saying? That's our focus. And I'm giving you guys some stuff right now that I don't really talk about. Yeah. But fuck it. You know, it's I don't care what they know anymore. Because I'm doing it anyway. And that's the strategy of it. And we come to grips. You know, yelling stuff out to me, it's pointless. It is.
I am glad that the wrestling, you're bringing back the wrestling roots. Because I think blending your striking with the wrestling to get you to the ground where you are one hell of a grappler will be good. So that's kind of what I was talking about, was those connecting of the dots that's been happening here. Yes. with the coaches that, yeah.
100%. Yeah, my best training partner I've had now is Kalen Hall. He's 6'7", 265 pounds. He's fucking big. He's a D1 wrestler. So he's not only an awesome training partner, he's like my wrestling coach and a great fucking big body. I get to practice everything against with him. With Luis, my jiu-jitsu, and I now have a boxing coach just keeping my hands sharp and working on things. I really, really have a great system right now. I'm really in a good place. I think, and the fight showed it. All aspects got used in the last fight too. So it's a huge weapon for me getting on top of these guys.
There's one question I know you'd never get fired up about, and that's who's next. I'm not going to bother with that. Just tell me a month where you're really comfortable, where you want to fight, like July, August, September. And another thing, are you a fan of rematches or do you like a fresh body each time?
I don't know what – I tried it with Andre and that fucker. He, you know, it's gone. The first time we fought, I needed to get it done, and it was just he was on that night. I believe he went into his next fight against Fedor and looked – that 3 minutes prior to Fedor catching him was probably one of the best Andre Arlovski's ever been. And then a decade goes by, and him and I fight again. And I think it's going to be different this time. And, man, did some shit go wrong that week. And Andre trained hard for me, and we went to a decision, beat the shit out of each other. And it sucked. But if I'm going to lose to a guy, I'm glad it was him because he's a fucking awesome guy. And every time I see him, I'm always happy to see him and joke around with him, and he's just a cool guy. It's the thing is so many of these guys I got to fight. If we weren't fighting, I'd be like, want to be best friends with these guys because we have so much in common. And, you know, he's one of those guys. Then there's some of the guys that I can't stand them. You know, I hear them or I see how they act. Can't wait to beat their ass. So luckily there's not too many of them because I like to be professional. I can, you know, I can love you and whatever and still punch you in the face. It's okay. We'll be all right. We'll shake hands after. It'll be okay. No big deal. Let's make the crowd go crazy, and then we'll have a beer after. And if you don't drink, it's fine. I'll just fucking slap you anyway. Rematches. If it's necessary. So I mentioned Tybura, the guy, you know, he's on a win streak. He's closer to the title than I am. But if I follow behind him with some wins, there's a chance him and I might make sense to have to fight him again. And I'd like to get that one back. You know, I want to fight him in the United States and fight him healthy and show him that he needed to count his lucky stars that first time we fought. That's just how I feel. I believe that he didn't see my best and he didn't it was unfair to him. It was unfair to him to not challenge him as much as I should have and to show him where I can really put him in his place. Again, it's just my opinion. Moving forward, I think I have a whole bunch of fresh matchups that are very exciting. Most of the top 10, it's all a fresh matchup. Yeah. A lot of the guys that I fought have moved on or gone or retired or been cut. So, yeah, it's all exciting matchups here and out. And then there's a lot more and more of these newer guys see me as easy fight, calling me out. Awesome. You know, let's get a little more vocal because when I talk to the UFC and ask for you, they fucking laugh at me. That's what they think of you. So you guys go ahead and keep. We'll get to them. I want these guys to start, you know, speaking up now. You know, now that I got this going, all right, keep speaking up. I know who you are. There's a few of them. And I'll see out the one. I already talked to Mick. This is why I said he'll laugh at me. That there was the other heavyweight fight that night, Taffa versus Vandera. Say his last name. Right?
Yeah, Vandera, something like that.
So Vandera there did the press conference, had my name come out of his mouth, said he wants to fight me. He said he'd fight me or Orlovsky, but he especially would want to fight me. All right, well, I'm especially going to try and help you make that fight. So I don't think it's going to happen because I got told LOL. But I'm down. You know, you're going to say my name. Hey, man, good. Come try to make your name off of me. Because I don't give a shit about rankings and politics. That shit, I can't control it. What I can control is wrapping my hands around you and rectifying your false sense of reality. So that's what's going to happen, bud. I'm going to push, try to get the fight to happen. I don't know what's going to happen though, really. You know, the UFC is, they do what they want. They got a master plan. Wow. But if we could get this guy to run his mouth, get him to run his mouth some more and we get the fans about it and the fans start giving the pressure to the UFC, then we can might be get that fight could get made. So I think that's what we need to do. Yeah. We need to get fans talking, tell fans, hey, let's make this fight. That's how this fight's going to happen.
Well, we got a big weekend coming up next week. I thought the winner of Sakurai and Biggie Boy might be good. That's fresh. And then you mentioned Tybura. He's got Wal Harris, the winner of that one. Or Vandera, man. I'm excited just hearing you talk about how excited you'd be to fight Vandera. So there's some possibilities, and we're pumped, and we're very happy for your win. And thanks for posting those pics of your baby boy on social media of him watching your fight. That was awesome. And thank you for the time today. Sorry about my computer, Big Ben.
Does that mean you're kicking me to the curb? You just, like, use me up, and you're, like, done with me? That's fucked up. I know where you work.
It's been a half hour. We took half hour of your time.
I guess I'd get sick of me after, like, 10 minutes, too, so I don't blame you. Right. It doesn't matter, though. It's fucking – your computer fucked up most of this and took, like, 10 minutes of my time away. So fuck you. Get your shit together.
I guarantee you I'll be getting I'll get a new laptop soon.
Go
just for you.
Fucking fix this guy.
Oh, okay.
You got it. My computer's messed up, right? Downloaded all that dumb shit. He's got some viruses. You know why. There's knock that shit off. Get that Kleenex box off your table.
Get this guy out of here. All right, Big Ben. Thanks for the time. We'll see you.
Love you, buddy. We'll see you.
All right, there he is. Big Ben Rothwell coming up. A big win over Chris Barnett this past Saturday. God, I want to say Josh Barnett so bad. Or anyway, it's not Josh Barnett. It was Chris Barnett. All right, our next guest, we got to move straight to him. He is the managing editor at Boxing Junkie. Let's welcome Mike Rosenthal. What's up, Mike? How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you guys doing?
Well, I'm powering through a laptop here that's failing me so bad that this – UFC heavyweight was threatening me for wasting his time. So hopefully it holds up here for the next 20 minutes or so. So we can talk science.
I heard him go off on you guys. I promise I'll be nicer.
Thank you. All right, so big news yesterday in the last 24 hours, maybe it was 36, John Jones has added Richard Schaefer, the former CEO of Golden Boy, as an advisor. And, of course, that's big for us because the whole world wants to see Francis Ngannou versus John Jones, though the UFC seems to be leaning towards Francis Ngannou and Derek Lewis because they haven't been able to come to an agreement with John Jones. John Jones has already parted ways with their longtime managers. That guided his career for a long time, and now he seems to have come up with Richard Schaefer as somebody who can maybe make that deal happen. The more I'm thinking about it, the more I'm looking at it, it looks like he may have picked the right guy. What do you think?
Well, you know, I've been in boxing for a long time, longer than I want to say here. And Richard's probably one of the two or three smartest guys that I've, you know, run into. Extremely smart guy. He didn't know he was a banker. He comes from a banking family, so he knew nothing about boxing 20 years ago. But he learned a lot, and at this point, he's one of the sharpest guys in the business. Now, the downside, I guess, or maybe it's not a downside at all, is that he hasn't worked in mixed martial arts. But maybe that doesn't matter.
Yeah. So he's got the banking experience, and then as CEO, he knows how to promote a pay-per-view and. I guess the behind the scenes that we aren't privy to because the UFC kind of doesn't really expose that. In boxing, we know all the purses. It's pretty public, but in MMA, it's not always like that. And here's another thing. I think there's always a politics game in combat sports, one way or another, especially when it comes to the big fights. He's no longer with Golden Boy. And the first thing that caught my eye was that Dana White was saying, that's a good guy. I like that guy. So right away, De La Hoya and Dana White don't get along. Just that meeting will be pleasant just to get things started just because of that, I imagine. But I just think they have a lot of things in common. I think they can come to some sort of an understanding that will be fair for all parties.
Yeah, obviously we can guess how things might turn out. But, I read the same thing. Dana obviously respects Richard. And, I understand why. Richard's a sharp guy. And it's not just that he's been a promoter, which he has. He's also made a lot of deals behind the scenes, a lot of big deals. So he knows how to negotiate. He knows how to work with people in that way. So, yeah, it sounds like they'll hit the ground running. Now, as I understand it, though, Jones is under contract with UFC, and it sounds like that Dana White really holds all the cards. But the good thing is he's willing to sit down and talk to Richard, and we'll see what happens.
What are your thoughts as you've seen our sport grow while covering boxing all these years? Do you feel like a proper heavyweight fight has closed the gap on what a proper heavyweight fight is in boxing? Like, everyone's fired up about Fury and Wilder. Looks like it's going to happen at Allegiant Stadium. That's a monster, And I think that's what the UFC had their sights set on. Do you think MMA is kind of closing the gap? And I know they won't make the type of salaries that they do in boxing, but again, are they closing the gap?
I think they closed the gap. If you're talking about specifically heavyweights, yeah, maybe they are. Maybe their biggest heavyweights coming up, but I think they closed the gap in general, a while ago. I think they're competing, if that's the right word. I think they're competing on even terms now for several years. I don't know about you. You'd have to tell me whether there's been other big heavyweight fights in MMA, but I'll tell you this. There's nothing like a big heavyweight fight. They have that heavyweight fight at Allegiant Stadium. The place is just going to be rocking. I go back to the Mike Tyson years. There was nothing ever even close to a Mike Tyson heavyweight fight. Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, 1 and 2, biggest things that I've ever experienced in boxing. It was unbelievable. And if USC just gets even a little piece of that, it's going to be very special.
I want to go back to John Jones for just a brief second. Attaining this new mentor and just the situation that he's in, is Richard Schaefer all about getting John Jones what he wants, what he believes he deserves, or is he just there to kind of fix the damage that's already done? What do you think, Michael?
That's a good question, but I would be speculating. I'm pretty confident when I say it's both of those things. Didn't Jones was pretty firm, he wants what he wants. And it sounds like Dana White wants to give him what he wants to give him. So there's an impasse there. But you just mentioned Schaefer and Dana White have a good relationship, so that's a good start. And I think that's a good point that you bring up. I think it'll also smooth over whatever problems there might be between Dana White and John Jones. Richard's been there a million times. He's done this a million times. I'd like to be a fly on the wall, but I'm sure things will go well.
Michael, in mixed martial art, or in boxing, sorry, in the history of boxing, there's been people who have big positions that have almost turned into characters. You know, I remember growing up, Don King was, he had a lot of power, but he was also a little bit of a character. And sometimes Dana White can play that role in our business. When Triller came up and these type of fights started, obviously, you know, the stance of the UFC, they haven't really liked this very much. But the one thing that we don't really hear too much is on the boxing side, the promoters in boxing and just the boxing fans, the writers, what is your feeling on Triller and these type of fights? How do you feel about them?
Well, listen, I'm an old school guy. I'm sort of a purist. I don't really like it. You know, it might be entertaining on some level, but I don't really like it. It's just not really boxing. And I've heard several boxers say that it's just entertainment. It's not really boxing. So if you look at it that way, it's okay. But it's drawing attention and money away from guys who've devoted their whole lives to this. I mean, Jake Paul and Logan Paul are just brilliant at marketing themselves, and that's why they're making the money that they're making. So, you know, God bless them from a capitalism standpoint, from a supply and demand. But the downside is that there's a lot of boxers, good boxers, who would love to make that kind of money and get that kind of attention. I don't bemoan them this opportunity, though. It's supply and demand. If people want it, I can't blame them for doing it. Same goes for the old retired fighters, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, assuming he comes back. De La Hoya's talked about coming back. If they can make money, I don't blame them. But in my mind, I separate the two. It's not really boxing. It's just a show.
Do you feel like anything that they're doing, if they continue to keep doing this over a period of time, will they have some kind of impact on MMA and on boxing? Will MMA and boxing have to maybe reformat strategy a little bit to contend with these types of things coming up?
Well, that's an interesting question. I think what they do well, you know, I sort of alluded to it, the Jake and Logan Paul are really good at self-marketing. Maybe boxers can learn from that and do a better job of that. I mean, Mayweather was a master at that. I mean, nobody was better at marketing himself than Mayweather, which is why he became essentially a billionaire or close to it. So from that side, yeah, you could do that. Another thing maybe is they combine them like they have in the past. I don't know. Like the Mayweather-Logan Paul fights got real fights on the undercard. So maybe you do that because then you draw in more fans that otherwise wouldn't be watching boxing. I don't know. You know, they've been doing this a long time in boxing, and big fights still sell. You don't need to put on this kind of show. But in terms of the overall health of the sport, maybe we can learn from that in that respect, from a marketing standpoint. You'll learn some things. You know, the Triller show, for example, the Tyson Roy Jones show, that was really fun to watch from a production standpoint. I mean, the broadcast, the telecast, the guys on camera, it was really entertaining. More entertaining, I think, than the average boxing card. So maybe they can learn from that also.
You know, brought up time in the Sunshine State. I imagine you're covering Mayweather, Paul, but then one of my favorite fighters, Teofimo, is fighting like 2 weeks later, right? In defending his titles.
Yeah, we got a lot of big stuff coming up. Yeah, Lopez is huge now. One victory over Vasily Lomachenko, and he's the man. Yeah, he's one of the handful of biggest guys in boxing right now. And this guy that he's fighting is not a pushover either. It's Australian guy, George Kambosos, tough guy. I think Teofimo wins, but that's a real fight.
And Loma fights the week after that, right? Yeah, I want to see them fight one more time. Though I think Lopez, I didn't know he was the truth that early. You know, he did a number on Loma, but I think Loma fights the week after, and I'd like to see them fight again. Do you think that fight can be made again, or was it too decisive the first time?
Another good question. I think it can be made. I think if Lopez wants it, that's the key. I mean, there's a lot of options out there for Lopez now. Maybe he fights Josh Taylor, who just beat Jose Ramirez to unify all the 140-pound titles. Lopez would have to go up and wait. I think he likes that idea. I think it would sell. I think a second Lopez-Lomachenko fight would sell. And I wouldn't be surprised if Lomachenko won the second fight. It took him half a fight to get going, but I think he won the second half of the fight. So I think it would be competitive. At the same time, Lomachenko's not a spring chicken anymore. He's not getting any younger, so I don't know. But yeah, I love that fight. And I think Lomachenko's done enough to earn a second shot.
Michael, George and I grew up watching boxing. That was something that we did a lot of. And we're the first guys, being the MMA guys, whenever they match up an MMA guy and a boxing guy, we're the first ones to step up and go, you guys are crazy if you think this MMA guy's going to – I mean, these are guys that have been doing this their entire life. It's no disrespect to the MMA guy, but it's just different. It's a different sport. However, Anderson Silva and Julio Cesar Chavez, that's coming up. Yeah. And my brain says Julio Cesar Chavez all day, of course. But if there were one guy for me to be scared about, it's Julio Cesar Chavez Jr., who in big boxing fights seems to not have taken training camps very seriously. He just doesn't seem to have the same heart that his father did. Does this fight in any way scare you at all?
Well, scare might not be the right word because I really don't care. Just because Chavez really isn't much of a factor in boxing anymore. But my gut tells me the same thing your gut tells me. Chavez is, he may have lost in his biggest fights and might have had some issues with discipline, but he's still a real fighter with a lot of experience. I think he's going to destroy Silva, absolutely destroy him. But who knows? Yeah, if Chavez is out partying, you know, as we're recording this radio show, doing this radio show, then he might have a problem. We'll see. He has to take it seriously. I would agree with that. But in terms of experience and level of skill, and isn't Silva 46 years old or something like that? I think he's in trouble, to be honest with you. Chavez is a real fighter, and he could crack. He can hurt you. I've seen him hurt good fighters. Now, it's a long time ago, but it's not like he's an old man. He has something left in the tank.
Two more questions, and we're really appreciative of your time. We're excited to talk about the sweet science. So sorry that we've pivoted to outside of Schaefer. But back to Schaefer, what do you think is the most important thing that maybe he can highlight to Dana White where he can maybe make Dana bring his number up a little bit? Because, again, in boxing, it seems to me, these are rough numbers, 80% goes to the athletes, 20% to the promoter. In our sport, it seems to be the reverse. What can Schaefer maybe point out to Dana White that can help him at least be the less stubborn of the two? Maybe bring up Jones's pay because it would be massive, Ngannou versus Jones. Do you think there's anything from his boxing experience that he can bring to Dana White that Dana White may not know, who also has been a part of boxing, but obviously not as entrenched as Schaefer?
Well, I'll try to get into the mind of a manager, a negotiator. So basically he's just going to – it's like selling anything. It's like selling a product. He's got to sell Dana White on Jones's value as a fighter and what he brings and how much money he generates, that kind of thing. The problem could be is I don't think it works that way in MMA, in the UFC. Everything seems to be more set. Dana White decides how much the guy's going to get and that kind of thing. Boxing is like wide open. Every time they start negotiations, it's like anything's possible. I mean, there's certain parameters. They look at pay-per-view numbers, you know, that kind of thing. So you try to estimate a guy's value. To be honest, I don't really know how it works in the UFC. So, and I'm not sure that Richard does. I'm sure he's done his research and he's talked to people, and he probably has a better handle on it now than he did. But this is tell me if I'm wrong, but it's really a different world.
Sorry, there, we lost you at the very end. You said, "Tell me if I'm wrong," and what was the rest?
I mean, it's just. Seems like they're a different world, a different business model.
Yeah.
And I'm not as familiar with the UFC side, so I don't know how much room there is to negotiate, would be my question.
I think I would start off with, do you really want to be the guy that didn't fill up that stadium with Ngannou versus Jon Jones? You know, because Dana White thrives on delivering the big fights. He said for a while that boxing, sometimes there was too many politics, promoters would clash, and we wouldn't get the big fights. You remember the big delay on getting Pacquiao and Mayweather together. He says that wasn't going to happen in our sport. So I think I would almost use his own words against him.
Very good. I like that. You should be in the room for Jon Jones also. yeah, I don't know. I mean, you tell me, is Jones the biggest? I mean, he's the biggest star ever in the sport, right? So, I mean, yeah, I would. That's what I would bring to the guys. I mean, it doesn't get any bigger than that if I'm reading this correctly.
He's probably one of five, I guess. McGregor, Ronda Rousey, Brock Lesnar, yeah, John Jones, George St. Pierre. He'd probably be in that group of five. Let's close with this. Pacquiao, 2 years he hasn't fought, and he's fighting the great Errol Spence. But, boy, do I salute him, because that guy just runs towards the toughest, more challenging fights. I know he's won, I think, eight different divisions, titles in eight different divisions or something like that. If he can beat Errol Spence, which I don't think he will, but if he could, does he kind of go down as, like, one of the top fighters ever, top boxers ever? That would be very impressive at his age, too, 42.
Well, I think he already is. I mean, he could, if for some reason he can't fight Spence, he already is one of the best of all time. I thought you were going to say, is he the number one best of all time? And I'm not sure that's going to ever happen. But, yeah, I wrote this column. I mean, he could have fought just any Joe Schmo and made a lot of money and just sort of cruised into retirement. But instead, he decides to fight a total badass, you know, one of the two or three or four best fighters in the world. And I thought I couldn't have any more admiration for Pacquiao than I already did, but I do. I admire him now more than ever. And I hope that other boxers and athletes, I guess, are watching this, because that's how it's done. That's the ideal, what Pacquiao did. He's going to test himself until the very last minute he's in the sport. And he's just an absolute legend.
Yeah, I was probably going to say top three is the highest I would go, because there's been some great ones. But, hey, Michael, this was awesome, and hopefully we can lean on you in the future as we – obviously our sports are crossing over. We're both part of the Junkie family, so hopefully we can do a little bit more of this when these big fights come up.
Please do. This was fun. I want to do it again.
Thank you, sir, for your time. Have a good day.
All right, guys. Take care.
All right, bye. That's Mike Rosenthal from Boxing Junkie. Give him a follow on Twitter at @MRosenthal_box. I like his style, goes. He's very, very objective, and he just tells you, like, this is what it is, but I ain't hating either, you know. But I'm old school, so I just, these are my preferences or whatever, but he calls it like it is, and that's the take to have, I guess, when you cover a sport.
He said something that stuck in my head. He said there's just nothing like when Mike Tyson was fighting a big fight. And I started thinking about, why is that? And obviously Mike Tyson was just a character in and outside of the cage. He had his own video game. I mean, he was just, there was no doubt that he was the baddest man on the planet, right, at the time. But I'm wondering if maybe the age of social media and all that, just because you can have a big event on a Saturday night and forget about it by Sunday, because there's always something new coming up, right? And there's ways of watching it and communicating with your friends. And maybe that's the reason why something, to me, I don't think anything's ever come close to matching that intensity of those nights, George, where you would have all your friends over and you would sit there and you would watch and you gave a shit about the undercard. You just wanted Tyson to walk out. And from the moment he walked out, you had goosebumps until the fight was actually over. I don't know that can ever be replicated. Do you?
Well, I've gotten those goosebumps in MMA. I remember exactly what you're saying. I guess because there wasn't much question that he would lose, that's one thing that lacked, you know? And so when Buster Douglas did it, we couldn't believe what was unfolding in front of our eyes. We kept thinking, oh, he's going to get him. Oh, he's going to get him. But he didn't get him. And then when we got to Evander, dude, if you recall, I think Evander was like plus 2,400, plus 1,600. They thought he was going to rip his head off. Yeah, I had some buddies that made a lot of money on that fight. And but not the second one, only the first one. So I think there just wasn't enough time to so pre-fight hype always centered on what round Tyson's going to ice the guy, whoever it was, except for the second Holyfield. That one, we knew he had already lost. We didn't know, you know, that one was played out a little bit more. But a lot of people thought he was just going to go through Holyfield as well. He was a big, big, big – it was one of the bigger ones, bigger paydays for a lot of guys. In MMA, obviously, you get the goosebumps from the bad blood and from the fact that both fighters usually have a really, really good chance to win. Ronda presented a little bit of the Tyson part where, like, how quick is she going to just get through this person? You're almost just rooting for her devastation rather than her. Because she was a little, you know, controversial. Not like Mike. Mike had gotten in some, you know, trouble outside of boxing and all that. But you know what goes? I remember telling Stitch Duran, when you go to Wembley Stadium for Fury versus Joshua, who do you fight?
Are you talking about the Klitschko fight that he went to? Or that he
the Klitschko did? Fight. Sorry, what am I thinking? Of course, he was with Klitschko. Yeah, I go, I bet you that one in your career will be hard to top. And so far, he's told me that. That was 90,000 at that stadium. And the UK audience is just as passionate as the American audience was for Mike Tyson. So I would say that was one. And then the way I've seen people react to Sakuraba and Inoki in Japan is, you know, obviously tremendous. I think Pacquiao has a little bit of that following. Because remember, are you asking about here in the U.S.? Because imagine how much the Philippines shut down every time Pacquiao fought. And Pacquiao was exciting, and his fights were compelling because you never knew which way they were going to go. You had a feeling he was going to win most of them, but he practiced the sweet science, so he has great skills, but sometimes he would throw them out the window and just fucking throw down, you know what I mean? So, yeah, there's been a few fighters for me that have given me that type of goosebumps of what Mike Tyson has done. Mike Tyson just came in around the right time. There really wasn't MMA as an opponent. Pro wrestling hadn't hit the heights that it's hit now. There was the big rock and roll connection in the 80s, and then things kind of quieted down, but it wasn't until things got sexy, what they call it, the Attitude Era, in the WWE, and they had the rivals of WCW, and then, of course, WWE ate everything up. Boxing had its own little spotlight, so that's kind of what made it special, and that's what kind of what made Muhammad Ali special as well during the times that he was in. You know, I mean, they owned combat sports. So I don't know. I don't disagree with him. If that's what he felt, that's what he felt. If that's what you feel, that's what you feel. But I've kind of felt a little bit of those butterflies for big fights in MMA for sure.
Mm. All
right. I was lucky enough to be at Kane versus Brock, and I was excited about that one. And I think that one had to do with just like a big Latino fighter overcoming this massive, destructive, you know,
force.
This beast in Brock Lesnar, who was successful in college wrestling, pro wrestling, and MMA. I think I didn't like Brock Lesnar because he took out Randy Couture, you know. So I remember having huge, huge goosebumps for that one. There's been quite a few in MMA that I got really, really jacked for. I think I'll have to write down a list and maybe I'll come up with a list for the next show and tell you which ones were the ones where I was like on pins and needles. I mean, this one's going to sound silly to most people because they don't understand, but Johnny Hendricks was probably the one guy that actually put in studio co-hosting on the map. And because of that, because he did it for so long, we got to see him on this journey to becoming world champion. And on that journey, I remember I went to Memphis, Tennessee. I think it was UFC 107. It was like 2009. I couldn't believe how nervous I was for that fight. A, I bet him. But B, I just knew any loss would take him out of the running to eventually fighting GSP, you know? I remember just being really, really nervous. And I think it's because I had taken a liking to him. He was an in-studio co-host. He was so cool, you know, and he's obviously revered in college wrestling. The Frank Trigg fights that I was at, oh, man, like the Mayhem one was pretty crazy for me. I don't know. Can you think of one off the top of your head before we end it?
I like the Brock Kane one because I can agree that was – pretty close. I was in the arena, so it's a different feeling. I was never in the arena for a Tyson fight.
You remember how crazy it was when Kane won? It was like Mexico had won the World Cup. You know, there's a big, big Mexican population in Southern California. So when Kane won and people were exiting, I remember the cars were honking. They were hanging flags. You know, people have like what do you call it, convertibles or whatever. So they're hanging their flags there or hanging them out the window. There's a lot of honking, a lot of cheering, a lot of this, a lot of that. And I hadn't really seen that in MMA up until then. That was a big, big fight, you know, for that community.
Mm-hmm.
And then Vegas has obviously had some big buildups for fights as well. I remember Liddell and Tito. I mean, finally getting those two to fight was a big deal. You know,
Connor and Aldo, I think, was pretty big too.
That was big too. You know, Penn and GSP the first time, that was crazy to us. You know what I mean? Two champions, like, what are they doing? Like, stay in your own lane. You're both great. You know, now we got to pick one to root against or whatever. But I remember that one was a big deal too. Well, we'll spend some time on this on Monday show. Monday, look, we're probably committed to being here on Memorial Day. I say it that way because we never asked for the day off, but it's going to be Memorial Day, but I just don't see how we won't be here. So we'll commit to talking about things like that on that show. We're sorry for the difficulties earlier, but I think we got a lot through with Big Ben and Michael Rosenthal. So shout out to both guys for doing today's show. I hope you all have a great weekend. Be safe out there. And happy Memorial Day, you know, to all of those. It's kind of sad to say happy Memorial Day because what we do is we honor those that have lost their lives in war. But I guess we should celebrate, you know, and be happy because we do live in the greatest country on earth. It's because of those sacrifices that the men and women in our armed forces that have made, you know, provided for us, that we get to enjoy a three-day weekend with family, barbecuing. It's the beginning of summer. So enjoy that part of it, I guess is what I'm trying to say. For those of you that have lost family members or friends, I'm sure it's always going to be difficult, but we honor them, people. All right, folks. We'll talk to you soon. Go out there and be a champion.